Dr. Campolo, we've got you on our show today. Just real quickly, I'm not sure if you got the note, but I announced to my listeners at the beginning of this season that I'm no longer convinced there's a God.
Uh-huh.
And each week we have what's called a Droogle guest. Droogle is Drew's search for God, my search engine there. Yeah. And you're our Droogle guest. And I'm asking all our Droogle guests, obviously you believe in God, and so I'm going to say why. And then the second question is, have you ever had an encounter with God? And I'm not talking about passive revelation, or I'm not talking about circumstantial evidence. I'm not talking about rumors of glory. I mean an encounter with God. So let's go with the first one here, Dr. Campolo, if you don't mind. Why do you believe in God? How do you concisely explain that?
I don't have an answer to the question. I think the answer to the question, as best as I can give it, is I decided to believe in God. In the end, I decided. I looked at the options and made a choice. And that may sound like a superficial answer. But in the end, Drew, you're going to have to make a decision as to whether or not you don't believe in God. In the end, you have to make a decision. You have to live either as though there is a God or that there isn't a God.
Can you not live as an agnostic?
Yes, you can. And some of the finest people I know are agnostics. But they are uneasy. And they don't simply dismiss the question and say, well, I no longer believe in God, i.e. they're not atheists. They're troubled. They struggle. I was on the Larry King Live show one night, and after the show, he told me that, you know, he's not sure, but he's struggling. It bothers him. So that's the first thing. The second thing is this, that one of the writers that I find most provocative in the best sense is Viktor Frankl, who was in Auschwitz during World War II. He is not a Christian. He's not a Jew in the theological sense. But here's what he says, that the only people who are able to survive the likes of Auschwitz, the only people who are able to endure suffering in the long run, are people who have defined a purpose in their lives. He says that suffering without meaning leads to despair. I find that there's a functional, not an ontological or intellectual argument for God, but a functional argument for God. Namely, I can't live without him. And what Viktor Frankl was saying was that unless you have some transcendent reality that gives purpose to your life, you're going to end up in a state of despair. The last thing I'll say to convince you, which I'm not going to do, I'm sure, because you have to make your own mind up, but let me just say this, that in the end, what I really hold to is that a guy like you, like so many of my students when I was teaching at the University of Pennsylvania and Ivy School, which were brilliant, would say, I don't believe in God, but when I look into the eyes of a suffering person, of a poor person, i.e. Mother Teresa-like, I have this eerie sensation that I'm encountering something sacred in those who are in need. That's a great statement. And I simply say to my agnostic friends, the difference between you and the difference between me is you don't have a name for that sacred presence that you discern in the other person. I look at my agnostic friends and say, you care about the poor and the needy just as much as I do. As a matter of fact, more than most of my religious friends do. And you do it because you sense that there's something sacred about every human being. And I have a feeling, Drew, that you do, that there's something sacred about every human being. And Jesus said, I am within those persons. When you relate to them, you relate to me. He says, many on the day of judgment will say, I was hungry, and you fed me, naked, and you clothed me, sick, and you visited me in prison, and visited me, sick, and you ministered to me. And they will say, we don't remember that. When did we do that for you? He said, you didn't know you were doing it for me. But when you related to people in need and saw their sacred essence and were recognizing the invaluable worth that that person has, you were really relating to me even though you didn't know it.
But doesn't that verge on sort of humanism, Dr. Campolo, whereby we love our brother and sister?
I would say this. any humanism that does not sense that there is sacredness in another human being is not a true humanist. In short, I would say that to recognize that every human being has a holy presence, something that must be revered, something that must be defended, respected, there's something about every human being that should create a sense of awe in anyone who confronts that person. I would say that person is religious. If you call it humanism, fine. But people who are humanists, who see human beings as nothing but Homo sapiens, part of the animal kingdom, struggling for survival, end up, as Nietzsche says, becoming people who have no sense of right or wrong, of evil and good. Nietzsche's great work, Beyond Good and Evil, mm-hmm. that in reality, he was unwilling to face the sacredness in other persons. Therefore, he said, the only value in the universe, read Nietzsche, this is what atheism leads to in the end. Nietzsche says, if you don't believe in God, there's only one force you can respect in the universe. It's power, because power guarantees survival. And if there is no God, all that is going on in the world out there are creatures struggling to survive, and therefore the only value that you have is the will to power, to overpower and get what you want no matter what the other person suffers. I think that Ayn Rand is the logical conclusion, and it's pathetic. So I'm glad you're just an agnostic and you're trying, but I have a feeling that you're more religious than you think you are. You just don't want to call the sacredness that you find in others God.
All right. I'm going to re-listen to what you've said here over this next week when I get a moment. And then when you come back into the studio here next Saturday, we'll have a longer discussion about this, a bit more back and forth. Right now, it's all about you and how we'll end this conversation, Dr. Campolo, is have you had an encounter with God? And I don't mean third party or circumstantial evidence or passive revelation or rumors of glory. I don't mean I looked into the eyes of a poor person and I encountered God. I mean an encounter with the holy.
Yes. That there are encounters with people that are loving and kind and compassionate. But every once in a while in those encounters, something mystical happens. And I feel that I have transcended time and space. And when I'm with you next week, I will relate two specific encounters in which I felt the presence of God in such an awesome way that it wasn't just an ordinary encounter. It was a supernatural encounter. I'll be glad to talk to you about it, but I need to tell you a couple of stories rather than just make a statement.
Please.
So when we're together, we'll get into it.
Yeah. I get it. Okay. All right. I think I'll have to trust you on that. You know,
wait with bated breath.
Oh, well, that's exactly what's going to happen. I mean, when I first let the cat out of the bag, it was with Ravi Zacharias, and sort of took him back a little bit. He wasn't expecting that, but I appreciate what he has to say, what you have to say. But I think one of the fascinating things about this journey that I've been on is two things I'll just relate to you right now. One is the sociological aspect of this. In other words, people's reaction to my saying I'm not convinced there's a God. People's reaction has just been, it's just been fascinating, absolutely fascinating. Whether they're threatened or whether they're motivated by love, or I mean, what are their motivations for pressing in or recommending 1,000 books or telling me I didn't think you were a Christian in the first place anyway, or you're just arrogant? I mean, where do these come from? So that's one aspect. And the other aspect is, as I've looked over the precipice of divorcing God,
mm-hmm.
and I go to jump. I mean, I wasn't just, I've been looking over that. I take a peek over that edge for the last 30 years. I've looked over the edge and gone, is this real? Is it real? Is this a bunch of garbage? And I think about jumping, but not until I actually prepared myself to jump. One, two, not until that moment where I face the reality that if I die tomorrow, there will be no more. That motivated me towards love more than any sermon, any Bible track, any Christian song, Keith Green, Larry Norman, Tony Campolo. You're a good communicator, buddy. You're one of the best. But when I thought my life could end and that would be the end of it, I thought, man, I need to giddy up with love.
You know, you sound like the great philosopher, Martin Heidegger, who said that it is only in the face of death, and it's only in the face of non-being, that we recognize the preciousness of the moment. And those who want to make this life meaningless by saying, oh, we've got endless eternity, and this life is not important, do us all a disfavor. We have to recognize the infinite preciousness of every moment of our existence. I want you to bring up that statement that you just made when we're on the air together next time, because I think that's the most profound thing that I've heard on the show. Namely, it's in the face of nothingness that we recognize, my goodness, this is it. I had better relate in love.
Yeah.
I had better take each relationship as being something incredibly precious. When you have an endless number of diamonds, diamonds lose their preciousness.
Hmm.
If you have endless amounts of time, the moment loses its preciousness.
Well said.
We'll talk about that.
All right.
It'll be a good time with you.
I'm looking forward to it next week live here in studio, Dr. Tony Campolo. I really appreciate your heart, mate. I really do. Thank you.
Okay. Take care, friend.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Again, Dr. Tony Campolo here on the Drew Marshall Show. He will be here next Saturday on the show, but then that night, October the 9th, he will be at King's Christian Collegiate here in Oakville, 6:30 p.m. He is the guest speaker at the New Direction Ministries Relevant Engagement. Basically, this is going to be a nurturing, hospitable space where faith and sexuality meet. New Direction is a fantastic ministry, newdirection.ca, and these folks are trying to bridge the gap between the church and the gay community. All right, folks, I think what we'll do at this particular point in time is some Droogle bits. Yes, that's right. You heard me. Droogle bits. If you're interested to know what Droogle is all about, go to our website, drewmarshall.ca, and click on Droogle. Basically, it's my search for God. I'm in a bit of a spiritual crisis, a slump, some might say. Going through a thing where I'm not convinced there's a God, and yet here I am still doing the show. But it's all there, and if it's the first time you've heard it and you've just fallen off your chair, go read it before you send me a nasty email. Here are some comments that came in from a few people. I'll just pick the short ones because the long ones are too long to read on air. This is from Maria in Toronto. I heard about your coming out. Excuse me? About doubting God's existence. Oh, you confuse me because I've often heard you say that the Christian life is the way to live. If you then believe that, then do you not believe what Jesus says about himself, that he's the Son of God? If you believe he is, then there is no question about God's existence. I also think you're being a suck about not having a real encounter with God. More than praying for a parking lot, and there it is. That was a parking spot, not a parking lot. That would be cool to pray for.
Oh,
dear
Lord, awesome.
Could I have a parking lot?
Wow, look at all those spots.
I've had a few encounters with God that after them I can never deny his existence. If I wanted to, I would be a liar. They were not hoped for or imagined, and I don't know why me. One in particular was a clear, tangible sign. God bless you on your journey to him. That was from Maria in Toronto.
Well, she ended on a positive note.
Yeah, and I can understand. See, people haven't lived my journey, so they don't know where I've been with this. And from an outsider's opinion, you see yourself as a North American. The guy posted this on our Twitter conversation between Bruxy Cavey, Paul Young, and myself. Paul wrote the shack. If you want to go to Twitter and follow the conversation, well, it's on our Droogle page, so go there. But if you want to follow it along, it's hashtag Droogle. That's what you put into your search.
Hashtag is also known as the pound sign.
The pound sign,
in North America.
Yes. The guy said, come on, you're blessed. Like, look how blessed you are. Why would you want anything else? And I said, I'm not seeking blessing. I'm seeking God.
Mm.
And I don't see being blessed, as a North American in particular, as a blessing. I see it as a curse.
Hmm. Can you define?
No, just materialism.
Okay. Right.
I mean, you talk to those in the poorer parts of the world. I've heard more than one comment about those folks saying, gee, I feel so bad for you guys over there because you're just so blinded to faith because materialism is in the way, you know? So
we have indirect friends who are connected to our church that are missionaries in Mali, and the stories coming out of there are insane. And yet here we are supposedly blessed, and we've hardly got anything to say about our faith.
Maria from Toronto says that you confuse me because I've often heard you say that Christian life is the way to live. If you believe that, then you don't believe what Jesus said about himself, that he's the Son of God. Yeah, I understand that. I still think that that if there is a God, then the best God life is the Jesus life. I really do believe that. But I'm stuck on, is there a God? Of course, Jesus did say, well, recorded anyway, that he was God. So, A, do I trust the recording of those statements? And B, there are those liberal scholars out there that would say, well, we can, let's pull it apart this way, and he's not really God. Mm-hmm. It's not really what he's saying, you know. So, yeah, I mean, I would reluctantly have to bow down at the foot of liberal theology for those ones, but... It's hard to explain. I've not been in this place before. So here's another one. This is from Earl Arnold from L.A. I'll say it again. Love Drew and his radio show, but he's full of contradictions. He castigated a listener, and that's castigated, folks. Let's just be careful what we're saying.
You have to be in person to do the other one.
That's right. A listener for suggesting that his crisis of faith is an ill-motivated ploy to draw listeners. Yes, I do get angry when people say that it's a media stunt. You're just doing this to have programming and more people tune in. My response to those people that think it's a media stunt, I would not wish upon anybody to have had the conversation that I had with my son after coming out with this. It was not a pleasant experience, from my point of view anyway. So, he castigated a listener for suggesting that his crisis of faith is an ill-motivated ploy to draw listeners. Yes, and I will castigate anybody and castrate anybody that says that to my face, which I don't think is true. While at the same time, condemning God or refusing to believe in God, see, it's different, but he put it the same, because God has allowed his own son to suffer with migraines. So let me get this straight. It's unfair to question Drew's motives, but God is free game. Yeah, I can see how you could see that as maybe an unfair playing ground there, or maybe I was a little hard on somebody. We may be getting God and man confused. I believe it's man that has a problem, and only God is good, as made clear by Jesus. This whole ordeal seems more a switcheroo than anything else. Now man is beyond questioning. God is subject to interrogation and immense suspicion, and ultimately it is God that will need to be saved. I think I understand your point there, Earl, but I think you're going a little farther. Because you're giving God personality traits that are true if you believe in him. But if you don't believe in him or you're not sure he's there, then those personality traits do not apply. So it's based on a set of presuppositions that, again, come back to whether God is real or not. Boy, did I just bore you? Tim just
No.
So
all that honey you put in my coffee.
So I do. I do get upset when people think that somebody would use a spiritual crisis as a way to get new listeners.
Yeah.
It does bother me. And yes, I do shake my fist at a God, because look, it's the ultimate game of hide and seek.
Mm-hmm.
This spiritual stuff.
Yep.
Is there a God? Isn't there a God? It's the question of the ages, and it's just this game that goes on and on and on and on and on. Sorry, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say, you know, once again, with regards to this whole thing about it being a ploy and a publicity stunt, you've never done that. And, you know, to accuse you of using this as some ploy, you know, you would
have
been doing something like this a long time.
Sure, but I have done other things. And like I've done, you know, we did Preacher Idol. You know, it was a fun little thing to do.
Yeah,
and I thought it'd be interesting.
That's not a question of
faith. Wasn't a ploy.
It's
marketing.
Absolutely.
But what
yeah.
they're saying is maybe you're taking your crisis of faith and turning it into some sort of a marketing thing.
Well, no, the sense I get from people is this is all a publicity stunt, and
right.
It's not even real.
Right. The mic.
That's a problem.
Oh, okay. Well,
if it is real, and it just happens to be like, well, great, we get some more listeners, but it's more of a conversation piece. But, yeah, people need to, anyways.
This is from John Hammersticks. Johnny Hammersticks.
Is he a drummer?
He's got to be. That's got to be a stage name. Hey, Drew, love the show. I have many of the same questions that you do in regards to faith and would like nothing more than to see a real sign from God. Just thought I'd throw in some great little bits that I've come across recently. I think it was a book by C.S. Lewis that said, since Jesus came, God chooses to work through people, that those in tune with him are really now the hands and feet of God. Human beings are now the vehicles through which God reveals himself. Say that in a Pentecostal camp. See how that goes over.
Oh, yeah?
Well, because, well, you know, there's...
But they're always raising their hands. I figure the whole hands and feet of God thing would be, you know, quite pertinent.
There's a group of people out there in Christendom that says, no, God is interactive. God is real. He interacts with us. His interaction period is not over. It's not a, you know, it's not just through ins and outs of the dealings with people. This was huge for me. I was waiting for an audible voice or fire from the sky, but have now turned to looking to my sign from God coming through a person. Mind explosion number two. A little scared to bring this one up because it makes me sound like a total space cadet. Anyway, I have this image of myself in my head, the picture of who I am in my mind. I think everyone has this. I thought this was harmless and natural, but now I see it as poison. Sorry, I know where he's going with this, and I've read it before. Some good point. You need to go to our Facebook group. It's just too long for me to go into right now. But I have really enjoyed people's comments, even the ones that are challenging me. This is from the Drugal discussion board on the Facebook group. This is from Mina Godinho. Godinho? I just wanted to add this. If you seek God, you'll find him. I believe that. But also, if you're asking God for a miracle, whether you recognize and acknowledge the miracle when it happens depends on your expectations.
Mm.
I know they said that on Drugal. Yes, they did. Some of us see miracles in answered prayer or in provision of something at the right time, while some can see awe and majesty in the birth of a child, and others can see God in the beauty and composition of a flower. Still others see God in the parking space they got close to in the mall. Let's keep coming back to that. And yet we also see some people, and I'm not saying this is you, who are so blessed and complain about every little thing that goes wrong and miss all that is right there in their lives. So I guess my point is, if you want a miracle, make sure you have your eyes, heart, and mind open to seeing it when it happens. I am. I am. My eyes, heart, mind, whatever else, I am very wide open to seeing anything. And it's not that I necessarily want to see a miracle in and of itself. That sounds like I want a dog and pony show. It's that I want to encounter God. And people say, well, you do encounter God through people. No! Stop with that math! That's a new math. It doesn't make sense to me. I mean, I get it in the world of Christendom, in the world of Scripture, in the world of... I get that. But I'm stripping all the tribal conditioning away and saying, no, I just want to encounter God. Someone told me once, I don't remember the source, but it went something like this. A miracle is not necessarily a miracle because it happens, but because it happens at the exact moment we need it. Amen, sister. I get that. So when I prayed for my son's headaches to be removed, to stop, and they stopped 2 weeks later, I don't see that as a miracle. I see that as the virus or whatever it was working itself out.
No, you're making perfect sense. And I mean, hindsight's 20/20, and my guess is, you know, years from now, you look back at this journey and you will hopefully see God's fingerprints all over the place.
Yeah. Let's do a quick break here. And
do you want to go out with that song? Or just...
Oh, yeah. Let's go out with this. Here's a little tune for you, folks. This is called The Atheist Song, and it's by Steve Martin.
I hear that song night after night, and... I stand on stage and I think, wow, religious people have such beautiful music and art, and atheists really have nothing. Until now. This is the entire atheist hymnal right here. This little song is called, Atheists Don't Have No Songs.
Christians have their hymns and pages.
Hymns and pages.
Father Megillus for the Jews.
For the Jews.
Baptists have the Rock of Ages.
Rock of Ages.
Atheists just sang the blues.
Romantics play.
Romantics play. Claire de Lune.
Claire de Lune.
Born again, sing he is risen. But no one ever wrote a tune.
Wrote a tune.
Forgotten existentialism. For atheists,
there's no good news.
They'll never sing a song of faith. In their songs,
they have a rule.
The he is always lowercase. For he is always lowercase.
Some folks sang,
a baccantata, Lutherans get Christmas trees, atheist songs add up to nada, but they do have Sundays free,